say we start a little early because we have to leave a little early.
Do you start for Sunday?
I just wasn't here Sunday. So Sunday we start 6:15 normally.
So 6:15 except for Wednesdays, which is 6.
Right.
Okay.
I hope everyone's having good zman, and you know, it says, and actually you'll notice this as you go along, every Seder of Shas has its own distinct personality. Seder Nezikin, you know, the Masechtos have a certain personality. Seder Noshim, Seder Kachim, you'll learn eventually. So I don't know if you're yet ready to, if you learned enough Noshim to absorb the personality, but you know, you'll see as you go along. Because this is the first Maseches and Seder Noshim we've had for a while, because we had 3 solid years of Nezikin, interspersed with Sukkah, things like that, but mainly Nezikin was the curriculum. Nezikin is different than Noshim, so you'll get a sense of kind of the different personalities of a Masechta. It's a very, very interesting thing. Bad joke about Gittin and Kedushin, famous joke, bad joke, don't tell my wife. People ask the question, in the order of Masechtos, Maseches Gittin is before Kedushin. Divorce, and then marriage. Why should that be so? So the joke that they say is that Hashem likes to give you the refuah before the Makkah. Bad joke, don't tell anybody. Okay. But the real reason is because actually that's the lashon of the Torah. When the Torah describes a woman being divorced, it says, V'yatsa, she is divorced, V'haysa, and she'll get married to another man. So in the language of the Pasuk, it says the divorce and then the marriage. Right, so the Gemara just follows, the Mishnah just follows the order of the Pesukim. Okay. Be it as it may, this Parsha, of course, is really the beginning of the history of the Jewish people, until now, universal history, the creation of the world, the sin in the Garden of Eden, the flood of Noach, the flood, and the reestablishment of the world after Noach. But all of a sudden, we have Lech Lecha, how God appears to Avram. Now, of course, Avram was also mentioned at the end of Parshas Noach. If you remember the story, basically Avraham, or Avram as he's called, right, without the hay, because he's not given the change of name till circumcision. We'll talk about that. Avram is the 10th generation from Noach, right? And indeed, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos points out there are 10 generations from Adam to Noach, and 10 generations from Noach to Avram. And what's interesting is the following. It's a little peculiar. It says, at the end of Parshas Noach, that there was a man, Terech. Terech is Avram's father. Terech has 3 sons. Avram is the oldest. Nachor and Haran, not Haran, Haran. And then it mentions Haran died while Terech was still alive. Okay? And it says Avraham and Terech traveled from Ur Kasdim, a place in Mesopotamia, to go to Canaan. And when they reached the midpoint of Haran, Terech died. And then we move to Lech Lecha, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram, you should go on to this land. So what exactly is going on? So first of all, keep in mind the following. You have to envision things like, you know, the Fertile Crescent. It's really kind of a crescent shape here. What happened was the birthplace of Avram Avinu is a place that is called Ur Kasdim. Ur Kasdim is the base, right? You'll say you have a crescent, it's the base of that crescent. It would be somewhere in, let's say, southern Iraq. Right? So we come from Iraq, we're Iraqis, so to speak. Why did Avraham and Terach leave Ur Kasdim to go to Canaan? You cannot say it's because of God's command, because God's command did not come till after Terach died. That's Lech Lecha, that's later. But even before God's command, it says they had left to go to the land of Canaan. So one big mystery is, why did they leave? And in particular, it wasn't only Avram, the righteous one, it was Terach. So there are a few different, actually very obscure part of the Torah. One explanation is that this is the source of the famous Medrash. Or Kastim, which is just Or of the Chaldees, right? Or Kastim were the Babylonians. But Or also means furnace. Furnace. Not Or. It's just related. Or with an O is light. Or with an U sound. Again, it's the same Shorish. Refers to a fire. And this is the source of the famous Medrash that I'm sure you've heard, that Terach was an idol seller, and he put Avraham in charge of the shop, and Avraham destroyed the idols, and he put the axes in the hands of the broken, smashed idols, and when Terach comes in and says, why did you destroy the merchandise? Avraham says, I didn't destroy the merchandise, the idols were fighting, and one idol, you know, knocked down the other idol. So Terach says, don't be an idiot. Everyone knows idols can't do all of that. And Avram then says to Terach, so why do you worship them? And like a very, very famous story, which is not in the Chumash, interestingly enough. But the story had some consequences, and that is the king of Ur Kasdim was a man called Nimrod. Nimrod is recorded in the Torah as the first conqueror. Nimrod conquered nations and subjugated them. He was the first one who did that, the first one who engaged in organized people in war. Now, granted, Cain is the first murderer, right? So violence comes back even a little earlier, but Nimrod institutionalized it. Nimrod collectivized it. Nimrod was a man of war. And Nimrod was an Oved of Avodah Zarah. And because of Avraham destroying the idols, he was taken into custody, as it were. And Nimrod demanded that Avraham be thrown into a fiery furnace. Or Kastim, the furnace of the Kastim. And of course the miracle was that Avram emerged alive. But it's interesting that even with miracles people don't do tshuva, meaning to say that Terach felt we could no longer live here because perhaps they're going to think that Avram was a sorcerer, and Avram, who believes in Hashem, is uncomfortable. So even Terach had an intuition that somehow the land of Israel wasn't called the land of Israel, though it was called the land of Canaan, was a holy place. It was almost like a magnet. It's amazing that from more than 1,000 miles away, there was a sense that there was holiness in that land that drew them. Now, it was obviously not called Eretz Yisrael for a very simple reason. Yisrael is the name of Yaakov. Yaakov is not even born yet. So it was called the land of Canaan because at that time, it was occupied by the Canaanite people, who are descended from Chum. Do you remember the very first Rashi? That the reason why the Torah begins with the statement that Hashem created the world is because otherwise, without establishing that God created the world, the nations of Canaan would say to the Jews, you stole our lands. So that's why we have to say Hashem created the world and He promised it to us. But if you look at an earlier Rashi, Rashi actually says the land was originally given to the children of Shem, and the Canaanites under Nimrod conquered it. So it was only temporarily in the custody of the Canaanites, who are descended from Chum, and essentially Avram's not conquering it at this point, but Avram is coming back to his land. Now, one other point here. So, therefore, it's fairly clear that Avram and Terach's initial trip is not because of a divine command, but it's because of an instinct, and maybe only Avram has the instinct, but he's influencing even his father, to go to a place of Kedusha. Now, it's not that the people in Eretz Yisrael were any better. They were also idol worshippers. But Avram felt that there's more potential for goodness and holiness there. So that's an amazing thing. So even before a divine command, there was an instinctual feeling that Avram at least had that this was a place of Kedusha. Now, the Medrash goes further on and says, this story is also an explanation of why Haran died. Why did Haran die? Again, not Ches, hey, Haran. Why did Haran die? So it actually says that when Avram was summoned before Nimrod, and Avram was asked to choose whether he believes in God or not, and if he believes in God, he goes into the furnace, and if he worships idols, you know, he'll be free. Haran was asked the same question, and Haran basically's response was, do Avram first, because Haran was a fence straddler. if Avraham survives, Terach will become a monotheist. If Avraham dies, Terach will stay, I'm not saying that, Terach, Haran. Haran will stay with the idols. So Avraham gets saved, so Haran jumps on the bandwagon and says, I believe in Hashem! He gets thrown into the fire. What is the lesson? God does miracles to those who are willing to give up their life without a miracle. Avraham, who didn't know there would be a miracle, Avraham thought he was going to die, and he was willing to die before he renounces God, God does a miracle. But the people who play it safe and say, I'm not moving until God does a miracle, they don't deserve miracles. So Haran died. Now, what is very interesting is this. So of the three brothers, Avraham, Nahor, and Haran, right? Haran died, and now you only have two brothers, and Terach then died, right? So first Haran died, then Terach died. Okay? But again, Haran died in Ur Kasdim. Okay, again, Haran died in Ur Kasdim. Avraham, Terach, and Nahor left, and on their way to Eretz Yisrael, they reached a town or a city that is called Haran. Not to compare, Haran. Now, in Haran, two things happened. Terach died in Haran, and Nahor settled in Haran. Now, where is Haran? So again, we don't have a map in front of us, but basically Haran is a city that is between the two major rivers, right? In Mesopotamia, you have the two rivers. You have Paras and Chidekel, which in English is the Euphrates, Paras and the Tigris rivers, right? And therefore, Haran was the capital of a place that is called Aram Naharayim. Aram Naharayim is Syria between the two rivers. So it's not Syria, the modern country Syria, it's north of that, but Aram Naharayim. Okay? Between the two rivers. I'm sorry, people have questions I wanted to...
Yeah, what was the connection to the point earlier on about people seeing miracles and still not doing tshuva? Because it sounds like Terach did do tshuva. He left with Kasim.
Yeah. My point earlier was not about Terach so much. My point was about the fact that Terach had to leave because it would be dangerous to live there, and why didn't the people of Ur Kasdim respond to this miracle?
Why did Nimrod respond to this? Because Nimrod.
Nimrod was there. Now, there is a drasha, though, that Terach didn't do tshuva. They're different midrashim, because there's a midrashic interpretation, Vayamas Terach b'Haran. Terach died in Haran. Right? So there is a drasha that says Haran comes from the word Haron, anger. He died under the wrath of God, meaning the midrash actually wants to say Terach did not do tshuva, but he died still in a state of divine anger. Which means the Medrash actually wants to negate what I suggested, that perhaps Terach had tshuva. But again, it's machlokes in Midrashim. Some Midrashim consider Terach a Baal tshuva as well. Now, again, I just want to show you, again, this may be obvious, but just to put it in perspective, how these various places are very significant. Because Nahor remained in Haran. Nahor's son was Besuel. Besuel's daughter was Rivka, and when many years later Avraham needs to find a wife for his son Yitzchak, he sends Eliezer to Aram Naharayim, the city of Haran, where his brother lived. Right? So Rivka was the granddaughter of Avraham's brother. Which means Rivka was Yitzchak's niece. Yitzchak married his niece. Is that right? Because Avram and Nahor were brothers. So Yitzchak and Besuel are cousins. And therefore, Yitzchak and Rivka are uncle and niece.
Even though they married each other.
Yes. Well, you're allowed, halakhically, you're allowed to. It's interesting. There is a... even after Matan Torah, there's a, to this very day, there's an asymmetry. An uncle can marry a niece, but a nephew cannot marry an aunt. There absolutely is this halachic distinction. Now, what makes things a bit more complicated is there is actually a double relationship here, because Abraham and Nahor married sisters, and the sisters they married were the children of their other brother Haran. Right, Haran died in Ur Kasdim. Haran had two daughters, Yiska and Milka. Yiska and Milka.
Was it also Sarah?
No. So Rashi says Yiska was another name for Sarah. And why? Because Sarah means princess, or Sarai was her original name. But Yiska means to gaze or stare. That everyone who saw Sarah gazed, stared at her extraordinary beauty, to be sochez, to gaze. And our assumption is that, although obviously she was physically very beautiful, as Avram said later when he went to Mitzrayim, that the Egyptians are going to look at you, etc., but predominantly the beauty was of a spiritual nature. Now, the old cliche that beauty is from within, is absolutely emes, and he'll discover it in Shidduchim as well, that Sarah's beauty was a reflection of her spiritual holiness and righteousness. So it turns out Milka was Sarah's sister, right? So Nahor married one niece, and Avraham married another niece, and there was a third child of Haran, and that's none other than Lot. Well, I don't know how old they were when they were married. In other words, we know that Avraham was in Eretz Yisrael 10 years before he took another wife, Hagar. But how old was he when he married? We don't really know. But it turns out, therefore, that you see, there's a lot of close intra-family marriages here, right? Avraham marries a niece, and Nahor marries a niece. Which would mean, actually, if you think about it, that Yitzchak and Rivka have a double relationship. Yitzchak and Rivka are uncle and niece. But, I'm thinking about Rachel, which is the next generation. That's going to have a double thing. Okay, let's put Rachel aside for that. Okay, all right. Now, obviously, there must have been something in Haran to be able to produce a Sarah, right? So you see that even Haran's decision to worship God after he saw a miracle counted for something, even though it didn't save him, but it gave him the zechus to have a Sarah. At least Sarah was given to him in the future way. Now,
wasn't that before?
No, it was before, but the concept is that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you schar based on what you will do. Now, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future. Okay.
So he'll give you schar based on what you will, but he won't punish you based
right.
on what you will do.
Right. Wow. That's right. Now, here's a question. It turns out, based on this description that I'm giving you, that Haran is not the place where Avraham was born. Avraham was born in Ur Kasdim, but Haran was the stopover on the Israel, where Terech died, and Nahor settled. Nahor settled, and that's where Eliezer was able to find Rivka and the like. So sounds like New Yorker. Okay. Okay. So, just if you go through Chumash Bereishis, you're going to have a problem. Let me just mention one little problem with this. Where Avram was born is not a simple question. Because when Avram tells Eliezer, do not take a daughter from the Canaanite women, take a daughter from my family, Avram says the following, go El Artsi, V'el Moladati. Go back to my land and my place of birth, Moladati, to find a wife for Yitzchak. Right, that's going to be in 2 weeks. We're going to read that. So Lechaira, there's a real problem here, because where did Eliezer go? Eliezer went to Haran. Now, Haran is where Avram's family is, that's true, but it's not his place of birth. Avram was born in Ur Kasdim. So why does Avram tell Eliezer, go to my place of birth? And by the way, this, I don't even have to ask it from then, I'll ask it from Lech Lecha. Because after Terech dies and Avram's in Haran, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says what? Lech Lecha, this part, I don't have to go. Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, go from your land, right? So we could say your land because that's where you are with your family. Umimoladetecha, which seems to be your place of birth, Umibeis Avicha, from your father's house, which again, that itself wouldn't bother me because that's where Terech had lived, El Ha'aretz Asher Areka, to the land that I will show you. So you really have the same question. Given the fact that Hashem is talking to Avram in Haran, per se, as it seems to be a continuation of the end of Parshas Noach, why would that be called Moladetecha, your place of birth? Right? So in other words, there are at least two places in the Torah where Haran is referred to as the place of Avram's birth. One is in Lech Lecha, and the other is Avram himself calls it Moladeti when he tells Eliezer to find a wife. So because of this, some Rishonim actually translate Moladetecha or Moladeti not as the place of birth, but the family into which I was born, meaning it's referring to family, leave the family in whose bosom you were born to have a new life. It is not referring to geography. Okay. Some actually want to say in a zigzag fashion that Avram was born in Haran. The family then migrated to Ur Kasdim, and then, as a result of Nimrod, they decided to go to Eretz Canaan with a stopover in their ancestral home of Haran, which in fact is the Moledes, right? So that would have to posit an extra trip, that Ur Kasdim was not their origin. Their origin was Haran. They went to Ur Kasdim, and then they left, and Terech died on the way back. Died in Haran when he got back, and then Avram continued the trip onto Canaan. In fact, according to this interpretation, when the Torah says Avram went with Lot and Terech to Eretz Canaan, some want to say it was only Avram's idea to go to Canaan. Terech just wanted to get back to Haran. Right? In other words, the way you split it is, Avram was thinking, let's go to Canaan, Terech, let's go back to Haran, which makes perfect sense if Haran was the place of birth, a place where the family came from. So again, even a simple question like where was Avram born is not so simple. The Ramban has a long arichas in trying to reconcile all of this. But now let me mention another interesting chronological question, and that is, how old was Avraham when he was given the divine command after Terach died? Avram was given the divine command to keep on going to Eretz Canaan. Actually, he wasn't even told what land it was, but the land that I will show you, meaning you will know when you're there. So the Torah tells us how old he was. The Torah tells us explicitly that Avraham Avinu was not a young man at that point. Avraham Avinu was 75. Of course, in those days, that was relatively young, but he was 75 years old. So Avraham was given the commandment of Lech Lecha when he was 75. In fact, this is why he did not take a Pilegesh, a concubine, Hagar, to have a child till he was 86. Chazal say that this teaches us that that when you get married, you try to have children for 10 years, and only after 10 years do you assume that you're not going to have children from a wife, and you either divorce her or take another wife when that was allowed, and you do not count the years of Chutz La'aretz. When you move to Eretz Yisrael, you start the clock over again, because the merit of Eretz Yisrael is going to help you, and that's why Avram, no matter how many years he was married before he came to Eretz Yisrael, he waited 10 years to have children with Sarah before he took Hagar, because Baruch Hashem he had children with Sarah anyway, but only after 10 years was he ready for that makeup. Now, here is the problem that we have. in Parshas Lech Lecha, among the events that we have is, we have Avraham is engaged in a war with kings, right? He sides with five smaller kings to fight against four larger kings. And remember, they had captured Lot, and Avraham redeems his nephew Lot, etc. And he fought on behalf of Sdom. Sdom was one of the five kings, etc. And afterwards, Avraham says to Hashem, Hashem appears to Avraham and promises him all sorts of things, and Avraham says, how do I know that I will have children? How do I know that I will deserve to have children? Etc. So there is a scene in the Torah called the Covenant of the Parts, the Bris Bein Absorim, where Avraham cuts up animals as korbanos, and the Shekhinah comes between those animals, etc. And Hashem makes a covenant with Avraham. Now, this is a mixed covenant, because on one hand, this covenant is God's promise that Avraham will have children, etc. But it also tells Avraham, your children will be slaves in a land that is not theirs. And they will be afflicted. And they will be persecuted for 400 years. And the nation that he afflicts them, I will judge. And then I will take them out. So this is called the Bris Bein Habisarim. This means the covenant among the parts. And it's very, very significant because it is both the promise of redemption and fulfillment, but also the ominous prophecy of slavery and persecution. And that is why it is accompanied, it's a very frightening vision that Avraham has, because in the middle of the day, there is darkness. Because it reminds us that the ability to acquire Eretz Yisrael is going to be bound up with much, much suffering, and that applies to future generations as well. Now, here's the question. I'm going to have to stop in a minute, but here's the question. So it says, Beferish, your children will be enslaved 400 years. Now, I'm going to quickly give you three numbers. In the Bris Bein Absorim, we are told that the period of affliction and slavery will be 400 years. If you actually add up the years from the time Yaakov comes, that's not even the beginning of slavery, but from Yaakov Avinu's coming to Mitzrayim until the Yetzias Mitzrayim is only 210 years. And the slavery didn't even start till Aftzeit. In fact, there's only like 86 years of slavery, to be true. Now, how do you get to 210 years? So let's look at it this way. How old was Yaakov when he came to Mitzrayim? We can figure this out. Yaakov came to Mitzrayim when he was 130. And he lived in Mitzrayim 17 years. That's in the Torah. We know that Yocheved, Moshe Rabbeinu's mother, was born. She was the 70th person. She was born as they entered. Mitzrayim. So, if Yaakov was 130, let's figure out how we know the Cheshvan. The Cheshvan, basically, you just add up everybody's ages. We know that we left Mitzrayim when Moshe was 80. Right? We left when Moshe was 80. And Moshe was not... Yeah, it's a question of how old Yocheved was. In fact, that's a whole kasha. You can actually prove Yocheved was older than Sarah when she gave birth. Right? Because we were in Mitzrayim 210 years. Moshe was 80 years old. So when Moshe was born, how many years had we been in Mitzrayim? 210 minus 80. 210 minus 80 is 130. Yocheved was born when we entered Mitzrayim. So Yocheved was 130 years old when Moshe was born. The Eben Ezra asks the Kasha, why does the Torah make such a big deal about Sora Imenu being 90 when she had a child? Yocheved had a child when she was 130. That's even a bigger miracle. But be it as it may, the second figure is 210. So how do you reconcile the 400 years with the 210? And then there's a third number. The Torah says in Parshas Bo, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, This was after 430 years. So there are three different numbers about the duration of the Egyptian bondage. 400 in the Brisbane Apsarim, 430 in Parshas Bo, and by calculating all of the ages of people, you will only get 210, of which only a fraction of that was actual slavery. Okay, so I'll leave you that with just a question to think about in terms of reconciling three numbers. And then the surprising conclusion is going to be that although the Torah says Avram got to Eretz Yisrael at the age of 75, his second trip, and the Brisbane Apsarim occurred a number of years earlier. And again, we're going to prove this, that Avram Avinu was in Eretz Yisrael twice. And then the question, of course, becomes, if he was there the first time, was Terach still alive? Okay, well, we'll have to discuss it. Was Terach with him? Was there a possibility that Terach actually made the trip to Eretz Canaan? Okay, so we'll address that tomorrow in terms of reconciling. But be it as may, you need to know these three numbers, the 210, the 400, and the 430. Okay, see you tomorrow.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.